Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Every Thursday, since we've all been told to stay at home, we've been checking in on an aspect of mental health during the COVID-19 pandemic. Today, we're going to be talking about parenting, or rather, parenting and teaching and coaching and all the other roles we think we're expected to play for our kids staying at home during this pandemic. Our guest has a fairly straightforward answer for that. Give up. Lenore Skenazy is the founder of Let Grow. It's a nonprofit that aims to counter the culture of overprotection. She also started the Free Range Kids movement, and she joins us now on the line from New York City. Lenore Skenazy, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Brian. You know, I'm originally from Illinois, so this is fun to be talking to you.
Great. So, I should also say that Lenore has recently written about the idea of post-traumatic growth, and we're going to get to that a little later in the conversation. But first, I want to ask you if you have a story about parenting during the pandemic, or better yet, if your little ones have discovered some new skills or interests that they didn't know they had. We want to hear about it. Join the conversation at 800-222-9455. Our number again is 800-222-9455. So, Lenore, I'm sure you've told the origin story of Free Range Kids hundreds of times, but can you take us back to the handbag department of Bloomingdale's 2008?
In fact, it was. Yes. Okay. Very good. You've done your research. So, it was 2008 when our nine-year-old wanted to do something by himself here in New York City. He wanted to have us take him someplace that he hadn't been before and let him find his own way home, us being me and my husband. And we decided that was great. So as you said, I took him to Bloomingdale's fancy department store, nice zip code, left him in the handbag department. I went one way. He went into the subway, which is actually right underneath the handbag department, took the subway home, took a bus across town, came into our apartment levitating with pride that he had done something, that we had trusted him to do it, that he felt really grown up. And I'm a newspaper reporter, or I guess I was. And so I wrote a column, Why I Let My Nine-Year-Old Ride the Subway Alone. And 2 days later, I was on The Today Show, MSNBC, Fox News, and you'll appreciate this, NPR, defending my decision. And that weekend, I started a blog and I called it Free Range Kids to say, look, I love safety. I love helmets and car seats and seatbelts, you name it. I believe in safety, but I also believe in my kid, believe in my city. And when he was ready to go, we trusted him to do it.
So what was the reaction to this column? Is it like, my goodness, finally, free the kids, or you know, world's worst mom?
Well, I think you hit on both of them. Some people were, yay, free the kids. This is how I grew up. I remember riding my bike till the streetlights came on. A lot of a flood of nostalgia. And then weirdly, some of the people so happy to think about their own childhoods and how much they appreciated that freedom said, but I would never let my kids do that today because what if something terrible happened to them? And that's when I started just putting the pieces together because the crime rate was actually down. We're back to the crime rate about 1967 at this point. But the fear had gone so high up that things that seemed normal in one generation, which were just as safe in this generation, had become completely untenable to a whole lot of people. And that's how I got this nickname, America's Worst Mom. Which was disturbing for a while, but my God, the nine-year-old is 22 now and I've gotten used to it. And now I think it's kind of funny that I can sit next to somebody back when we used to sit next to people on buses or whatever. And I could say, hey, Google America's Worst Mom. And they do. And then they go, ah! Because that's who they're sitting next to. So it became a little bit of a parlor game for me. But it's been a strange journey.
You know, all of these things seem rational, right? You mentioned the bike helmets and the car seats and the, mm-hmm. you know, don't talk to strangers. All of these things seem rational individually. But mm-hmm. but I think your sort of the overarching theme of your argument here is that this adds up to a culture of fear. What is the reality in terms of the danger that is lurking or not lurking, you know, at least before COVID-19 became a part of our lives, which we'll get to in a second?
Oh, sure. Well, the reality is never the same, in FBI statistics as it is in our brains, because the FBI statistics show that crime was going up from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. It peaked in around 1993. Here in my own city, New York City, there were about 2,000 and something murders in 93, and we're down to about 200 now, between 200 and 300. So clearly, things had gotten safer. Things are never completely safe. And I think what really changed is the belief that you can have a zero risk life And that anytime you take your kids, sorry, that's, I am in Queens, New York City. It's the epicenter of the epicenter of COVID. I'm very sorry to say, and I live four blocks from the hospital, the Elmhurst Hospital that you see on the news. So that's a siren going by. But in terms of sirens for, you know, terrible things happening to children at the hands of strangers, those have gone down, and a really stranger danger was always sort of looking in the wrong direction. Far more children are hurt by, unfortunately, you know, people they know than people that they don't know. But it became such an obsession with the country, and then with Law and Order coming on and mm-hmm. Catch a Predator. I mean, it just became the go-to story that any news show or fiction writer would use, because it is so compelling and so distressing that you're almost guaranteed an audience.
Well, now we just heard the sirens outside your window in New York City, as you said, and now there is a danger outside. And I think mm-hmm. that has prompted you and the sort of the free range kids idea to look at the development of kids inside. Now, we're, you know, many of us are stuck inside. A lot of us are fortunate enough to still be able to work. And that means that we maybe don't have the amount of time to spend on the kids that we might feel the pressure to. Mm-hmm. You know, before we talk about these changes that the virus has wrought, for mm-hmm. people who maybe don't have kids, can you run through what a typical day might look like? You know, hurry up, we got to get out the door, got to get to school, that kind of thing.
Sure. You're talking pre-virus, right?
Yeah, pre-virus.
Yeah. What childhood looked like was a lot. I can't believe there's another siren. I really was rejoicing that recently the number of sirens going down my street had really gone down dramatically from like 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
And now you happen to hear two. So that's a little anomalous. But here's what childhood had become for many kids. Obviously, nothing is ever for all kids.
Sure.
But it was extremely structured, pressured life. You have to get up early because, you know, you have to get your breakfast ready and, you know, finish your homework. And mom has to drop you off on the way to school because she has to get to work afterwards. And so you can't possibly pour your own cereal or milk, because if you spill, then everybody's back 15 minutes and it's terrible and you can't get there soon enough. And so she's making your cereal and you're wailing and somebody can't find a shoe and you got to get out the door. And then you get out the door and you go to school and you get there early and you're not allowed, at least my kids' school, you weren't even allowed to play before school because there were no balls allowed on the blacktop because it's so crowded with parents all standing next to their kids and children. And then you're in school and the amount of time for recess has whittled down to 15, maybe 20 minutes. At my kids' school, you weren't allowed to run on the blacktop. You could only run on the exterior of the blacktop. And so it was very, very regimented. And then you have to line up and get back in. And then finally, it's the bell rings and it's the end of school. But then you're either in homework help after school, or you're going to soccer, or you're going to swim practice or ballet. And so that takes another couple hours, and you're driven there and you're in a back seat and you're strapped in your car seat. And finally you get out and it's time to go home. But then there's homework and then there's the reading log. And then the parent has to sign the reading log, and you have to swear that you're really interested in Harry Potter, and you write down a question what you think he's going to do next, because that proves that you're engaged, even though that makes it really boring because suddenly it's turned a pleasure into a job for school. And you fall asleep exhausted and you wake up at 7:15 the next day to do it. And you do it for far more weeks and hours than you or I'm assuming than you or I did when we were kids. The school year has expanded. The school day has expanded. Recess has contracted. And the amount of time kids spend in adult organized, adult supervised, adult run classes and programs after school is just exponentially more time. And so kids had no free time, very little free time. And I think the assumption was that if there was free time, kids were either wasting it, either their brains were rotting away, or they were in danger because, God forbid, they were outside. And so the number of kids walking to school had dropped to 11%. And really, one of the things that the psychologists were seeing was a rise in anxiety and depression among kids. And it's not just, you know, New York City kids. It's across the country. I was speaking just the other day with a school counselor for an elementary school, so that tells you something, down in Nashville. And she was talking about how in 18 years, each year, the kids had seemed more and more anxious and more worried and upset when they came to school. And now there were a bunch of kids who couldn't get themselves through the school door. It was just so, they were just so riddled with anxiety. And so right until the virus hit, I would say that we were hitting a separate crisis, obviously one that wasn't as horrible as a pandemic, but there was an enormous amount of anxiety among today's children, to the point where I think it was 70% of adolescents said that anxiety and depression were a problem for them and their friends.
If you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're talking to Lenore Scanese, the founder of the Free Range Kids Movement and the nonprofit group Let Grow. And if this sounds familiar to you and you want to talk about what you've been experiencing in the after times now, after March 16th, give us a call, 800-222-9455. That number again is 800-222-9455. So for many of us, Lenore, March 16th, at least that's what it was in Illinois, rolls around. Mm-hmm. And all that scheduling, the music lessons, the dropping kids off at school, I'm going to make breakfast because I don't want to give it takes it, 15 minutes longer when you do it. That all goes out the window. Mm-hmm. And kids are discovering this free time, right? This is a sudden change for people.
It is so sudden that it's almost like opening the doors at the zoo. It's like all these kids are suddenly faced with a giant swath of free time that they never expected and never experienced. And, at Let Grow and at Free Range Kids, all I've been saying all along is that our kids are smarter and more competent than we give them credit for. And one of the reasons we didn't give them so much credit is because, as you said, we were in such a rush to get so many things in during the day that there wasn't any time for them to expand and just, make dinner for the family or wander around the neighborhood or go build a treehouse. But now they have all this free time, and people were writing to me as like, is this going to be a total helicopter moment? Because now the kids are never away from their parents. But in fact, they are sort of mentally away from, it wasn't just parents before that were helicoptering. It was a helicopter culture that gave kids structure all day long imposed by somebody else. And now no parent can entertain or teach their kid for the 18 hours a day or whatever that their child is awake. And, online learning, distance learning takes a couple hours a day, perhaps, but that still leaves this giant chunk of time. And I have a friend whose daughter is coming to my house. I'm not meeting her. I'm putting it on the door. I'm hanging a container of yeast on the door for her to take home because she's baking so much and so is everyone else. And there's no yeast left at the grocery stores. It is hard to find flour. It is hard to find sugar. So kids are not just baking, which is something that children used to like to do. They're riding their bikes. I've heard of so many kids learning to ride their bikes now. And of course, because they couldn't ride their bikes before, they didn't have time to do it before school or after school. Some schools won't even let you ride your bike to school. Some schools won't let you leave on your own. You have to be picked up by an adult. Some schools wouldn't let you get off the bus at your own bus stop without an adult being there to walk you home. I mean, that's the kind of sort of over the top, over protection that had become common. And now kids are riding their bikes. I mean, I live above a courtyard and I see kids on their scooters and their bikes. There's never been I've been in the same apartment building for 10 years. There's never been a kid in our courtyard, but suddenly they're bored. They're bored and they're young and they're using their legs and they're using their brains and they're doing all sorts of cool things. We have a contest at Let Grow. It's not Let It Grow, it's letgrow.org. And I was just looking today at the photos that were entered. There's a kid building a treehouse and I couldn't believe that like an adult hadn't helped him, but according to the caption, it was him. It's like building treehouses. How long since you've seen a kid build a treehouse? Brian, how long?
Yeah, I can't think of the last time I've seen a kid build a treehouse. So never, I guess.
Yeah, I think never is the answer. Yeah, not in our lifetime.
So we got a comment from a caller named Dave, a beekeeper in Central Illinois, who says that kids should not be so afraid of insects. I guess this is something else they can do to explore their world in this time when they're staying home, or at least in the yard or close to their home.
Well, of course, I would say that too if I had a bunch of bees wandering around the neighborhood. But it is true that once kids are outside, everybody's worried that their kids are going to be on their computers a lot, and they are. And first of all, that's a kind of strange worry because A, I'm on my computer all day, and B, there's everything on computers from, exploring the stars with Neil deGrasse Tyson and cat videos. So, and there's Call of Duty and there's science experiments. So just saying they're online is like saying they're breathing. I mean, that doesn't strike me as automatically a terrible thing. But what I am noticing is that you know, even me, you can't be on the computer all day long without wanting to do something else at some point. And that's the baking, but that's also the discovery of the outdoors. And, you know, it turns out the outdoors is really engaging once you're not just driving by it in a car. There was a study done at, I don't know where it was done, but there was an experiment where some person asked children to draw their route to school. And the kids who were driven to school showed their house and then the school, you know, and there's sort of a line just in between it. But the kids who had walked showed much more detail, like here's the tree where the squirrel lives, here's the mean dog, you know, here's where I once found a dollar. And I think that we're giving that back to kids now. I mean, through no fault of our own, they have this free time. And I think they are discovering bugs. I think they're discovering their neighborhood. I think they're discovering baking. I think they're discovering who they are and what interests them, as opposed to what they were simply thrown into because parents are working and you need something for the afternoon and ballet and chess sound great.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I'd hope to talk to you about post-traumatic growth, but we are running out of time here. And so I don't think we're going to be able to get to that, but we will definitely link to your column on that. It's worth a read. You know, we hear so much about post-traumatic stress, but I think, I don't know if in 20 seconds, if you can sort of sum up this idea that sure. You know, things are not necessarily going to be terrible after this
right.
experience.
Well, the idea is that people don't realize there is such a thing as post-traumatic growth. It's actually more common than post-traumatic stress disorder, what we've heard about. And when you think about something like the greatest generation, why were they the greatest generation? Were they born better than us? They went through so much. They went through the Depression. They went through World War II. They had to rebuild afterwards. And so what happens? People are sorry that terrible events occurred. And of course, there's sorrow and pain, but there is growth. We all know there's growth or we wouldn't be human. We couldn't stand being human if people didn't eventually absorb the bad things that had happened and then grow from it, become more compassionate, more interested, more fully alive.
All right. Lenore Skenazy is the founder of Free Range Kids and the Let Grow initiative. You can find that online. We'll have a link to it at our website. More to come on the 21st. Stay with us.